The magic of radio has taken us to the beautiful Blue Max nightclub in the Hyatt Regency O'Hare for a chat with our guest today, Red Button. Welcome to Chicago, Red.
Oh, thank you. My golly, this should be a colorful interview. The Blue Max, Red Buttons, we're all set.
Also, how did the name Red Buttons come about? That was not your given name?
No, not really. My given name was Blue Zippers.
Blue Zippers.
That was the name I was born with, but I had to change it when I went into show business. I mean, how would it look on a marquee? Blue Zippers opens tonight.
Could have been Green Cumberbum or something like that.
I don't take any chances. I start with an opening laugh right away.
Well, you got one, and we're glad that you did, too. The Blue Max is a long way from a street corner in the Bronx. Took quite a trip to get you here, and you've had a long walk, too, getting from there to here. Where did you go from that Bronx street corner?
Oh, my God. You mean to get to the Blue Max?
No.
That's a long walk to the beach. You're leaving out an awful lot of stuff in between.
What was the first step?
Oh, I was in amateur contests and sang on street corners for pennies.
Mm-hmm.
Practically did it all. Sang in choirs, played the Catskill Mountains.
That's the Borscht Belt, right?
That's right. Went into burlesque when I was very young. I was the youngest comedian in burlesque. As a matter of fact, I billed myself as the only comedian in burlesque with his own teeth. And as it turned out, I was the last comedian in burlesque, too. I was on stage when the place was raided.
Oh, you were?
In New York City, yeah. I was doing a scene from Shakespeare's immortal drama, Who's Got Pockets? When the cops came down the aisle and pinched the place. I'll never forget the mad dash we made for the patrol wagon. Nobody likes to stand riding downtown. Well, when we got to the courtroom, I'll give you an idea of how bad this sketch was, right? We got to the courtroom, the judge. Well, let me put it this way. When the judge made us do the sketch, right? The same sketch that we did when they pinched the place. And give you an idea how dirty this sketch was when it was over. The judge had the jury arrested for watching an obscene performance. I almost didn't get that out.
Let's back up to the Catskills. That's one of the greatest training grounds for talent from some years back. What was the scene up there? What was it like? What did you do? Did you just strictly entertain, or were you working elsewhere, and behind the scenes?
Well, I strictly entertained, but you entertained on and off stage.
Mm-hmm.
See, in those days, they used to call comedians tumblers. You tumbled. You made noise, you ran around, you had fun, at dinner, you shaved with sour cream, you jumped in a pool with your clothes on, you did all kinds of crazy things. You entertained the guests 24 hours a day. That was your job. And you did six different shows a week.
Because you got the same people there.
That's right, that's right. And we were like a stock company. And by the time the 10 weeks were over, you had done, 60 shows. And all kinds of different things, condensed versions of Broadway shows. You did dramatic things. You did farce comedy. You did burlesque sketches. You did stand-up stuff. And before you know it, you were molding a personality and a career and learning how to get it on and off a stage. But we enjoyed a marvelous sense of freedom up there, you see? And when you operate as an artist in a free climate, it's very healthy because you can make mistakes, and the mistakes won't be, heinous errors, I mean, things that could chop a career off the way it does today in television. You know, you get today the exposure is in front of millions of people. There was just, a couple of hundred, didn't matter. So you were able to experiment and play and fool around and find.
Did a lot of your, for example, jumping way ahead to TV, some of the characters you created on TV, I'll bet you probably created back there.
Yes. I think the Metamorphosis, went that way. I think it started, in Catskills and through the burlesque and through the other things that I did and culminated,
From the Catskills, then, you went to burlesque, and were you strictly on the East Coast, New York area?
No. No, I played the road shows. I played Chicago when I was a very young kid. I played the Rialto Theater on State mm-hmm. Street,
mm-hmm.
you know. And I got a taste of the United States of America as a young kid.
Now, how young were you when you were in burlesque?
Oh, I was 18 and a half when I went uh-huh. to work for Minsky. I mean, really, I was a baby. I tell you, I got hit with so many turkey bladders, I grew up hating Thanksgiving.
That was a standard thing in burlesque.
Yeah, that's right.
What about the Broadway stage? Did you hit that right out of the burlesque, out of the burlesque theater?
Yes, I did. I did. I did my first show out of burlesque. Jose Ferrer caught me when I was working in stock for Minsky in New York at the Gaiety Theater. And unbeknownst to me, he became a fan of mine.
Mm-hmm.
And then he hired me for my first Broadway show, which was a calamity. Because we went out of town, we were a hit with it out of town, and we were supposed to open December 8th, 1941, at the Playhouse Theater mm-hmm. in New York City. Well, that would have been fine, except that we closed December 6th in Baltimore, and we were on our way to New York December 7th, 1941, and the show was a farce about Pearl Harbor.
It was?
That's right. That was my first show.
Oh, my goodness.
So we never opened. It was a marvelous cast. It was Jose Ferrer and Uta Hagen, great legitimate actors, Alfred Drake, his first show.
What was the name of the show?
The Admiral Had a Wife.
And it was a farce?
A farce.
Pearl Harbor.
Late at Pearl Harbor.
Talk about timing.
That's right. You talk about timing.
It was as a...
I swore at that time that the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor to keep me off Broadway.
Has it ever been produced since then?
No, never.
Just died. Oh, my God.
Never opened.
People always remember what they were doing on Pearl Harbor, and that what a memory that is.
Yes.
Well, all right, what happened then? Into the service then, I suppose, huh?
Well, not yet. I did two Broadway shows after that. A show called Vicky, a farce, again with Jose Ferrer, following year, and Wine, Women, and Song in the same year. And then in 43, I went out of the service.
Mm-hmm. And you were in the Air Force.
I was in the Air Force.
Got a little bit of show business experience
Yes, I did. I did Wing Victory for Moss Hart mm-hmm. with some great people in the cast. Mario Lanza was in the chorus. And I went to Europe after that show broke up in the service.
Mm-hmm.
Joined Mickey Rooney and great bunch of people. As a matter of fact, the boy that lives in Chicago, Zelly Greenspan, was in that outfit, and he and I are still buddies all these mm-hmm. years. And we played everything, saw everything. We were at the Potsdam Conference, first troops into Berlin, played all through France, all through Germany, saw history being made. Got out of the service and went back in the nightclubs and the two more Broadway shows, played the Paramount Theaters, the Lowe's State, the Capitals, and all those, played mm-hmm. with the big bands, and then into television in 52.
Was there any motion picture work before the TV thing in 52?
No. Sayonara was the first mm-hmm. crack out of the gate.
The first thing you did, and you won an Academy Award for it.
Yeah.
How did... Well, I want to talk about television, and we'll talk about the movies, too. How did you get into television? Where did it come?
Well, I was fast. Mm-hmm. I was fast rising at that point. Mm-hmm. You know, around mm-hmm. 50, 51, I was starting to make mm-hmm. a lot of noise around Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
And people were catching me. And then, ironically, I did a segment of Joey Lewis's life, you know, the late, great Joey Lewis, mm-hmm. the comedian,
mm-hmm.
the part where he was cut up, you know, he made his comeback. And I played Joey, and that was a dramatic show, and that opened up all the doors for me in the comedy field in a funny sort of a way.
It's interesting.
Yeah, very interesting.
You were about the hottest thing on television while you were on.
Well, I caught a couple of very, very good years.
I can't...
And then the last year caught me.
Well, you had... What happened? Why did it end?
It was a tough show to write and tough show mm-hmm. to do, and things went out of kilter, and you can't go out of kilter. I mean, you know, one break in the chain, mm-hmm. and you're done for. And my chain just broke mm-hmm. in a couple of spots. I was to blame. Others were to blame. But it doesn't matter anymore. You know,
well,
it's all past history.
The folks who watched it, though, enjoyed it. And while it was there, it was a good
Thank
show.
You.
And we were glad for it. Of course, we could hardly wait each week for the the ho-ho song and strange things are happening.
I enjoyed it myself.
I missed those two songs in your act.
I did it in the second show. You must have left.
Cut out after the first show.
Yeah,
it's there in the second
show. No, I do it. You know, I throw it in.
You decided the press didn't need it, though.
Well, it was a long night.
Now I have to come back because I want to see that. Well, then TV, of course, you did your Red Button show, and you were involved in some Playhouse 90 things, and really getting away from the comic stuff into some of the serious things and some fine TV performances. Now, did that lead you to the films, Sayonara?
It's hard to answer. Sayonara was there at the right time, you know, mm-hmm. in a performer's life. It was for me. I was off television at that time. It was a low point in my career. And Sayonara came around at that time. I had a fight for it. I tested twice. I really sweated out. Mm-hmm. Between my first test and them saying okay, about 12, 13 weeks elapsed. I don't think they really wanted to do, you know, a picture with a ex-television comedian.
Mm-hmm.
I think it frightened them a little bit, but apparently I made the best test, so I got the part.
Well, how did you know of the part? I mean, did an agent say this?
Well, yes, I sat and had lunch one day with a fellow who wasn't even my agent,
mm-hmm.
but somebody that I had known around. When he got out of the service hanging around Lindy's, I was kind of nice to him and used to invite him over to my table for coffee and things. And he was a young kid and he never forgot it. And then he became a very successful agent. So he had lunch with me one day and he said, "Did you read James Mitchell's book, Sayonara?" I said, "No." He said, "Well, pick it up and read it. There's a great part in there." He said, "And if you think you can do it, let me know. I'll go to Josh Logan." That's the way it started. His name was Marty Baum, who today is a producer. He produced mm-hmm. Cabaret, They Shoot Horses, Don't They, Lovers and Other Strangers. And he just finished Bring Me the Head of Alfredo Garcia for Sam Peckinpah. And right now he's in Africa. And he's going to do a marvelous picture, a great script called The Wilby Conspiracy. He's going to do that with Michael Caine and Sidney Poitier.
Mm-hmm. Well, now he used you in They Shoot Horses.
That's right. And that was his first picture for mm-hmm. ABC when he became the head of ABC when he stopped being an agent.
You did a fine job in that film.
Thank you. I was very proud of it.
Excellent film. And to say nothing at all of Sayonara, which was, of course, outstanding, and everyone agrees with that. Glad to talk with you about these things.
Thank you.
All right, now, then from Sayonara, you opened up rather a whole new field in movie
making,
didn't you?
Yes, I did. I did, yeah. I've done about 18 to 20 pictures since then.
Poseidon Adventure?
Yes, that was the last one.
Mm-hmm. You have a new one coming out?
Well, we're going to do a sequel to the Poseidon Adventure.
Gee, it sank, didn't it?
I think they're going to follow the people now. Take the six
uh-huh.
people who survived.
Mm-hmm.
And they're writing a story around that. I understand a very, very interesting one, too.
Hmm. And now, do they have they an option to use you in that? Or is
of course, they won't be able to do it unless they round all the people uh-huh. up, you know, uh-huh. get a definite date.
Does that help, the fact that they would like to do a sequel, does that help your position from a bargaining point of view as an actor, earning a living?
Well, you don't go in to kill anybody,
mm-hmm.
you know. You're dealing with friends anyway. Irwin mm-hmm. Allen, who produced The Poseidon Adventure, that was the third movie I had done for him. I did The Big Circus for him with Victor Mature, and I did 5 Weeks in a Balloon
mm-hmm.
for him
mm-hmm.
with Cedric Hardwick and Peter Lorre. And so Poseidon was my third picture, and we're good friends.
Oh.
But I am going to go in and kill him.
Mm-hmm. Take him for everything. Oh, good. You deserve it. I think you do. You recorded a children's album.
True, true, true.
Moving in the area of recordings, too.
Well, I've recorded before that, Ho Ho and Strange
yeah.
Things, or big recordings. Yes, I did. I'm very proud of that.
Mm-hmm. Tell me the name.
Well, it's an album. It's called Love Daddy, Poems for My Daughter and Other Little People. It's on Golden Records. And it came about in the strangest way. My wife bought my daughter Amy a blackboard, which she put up on the kitchen wall
mm-hmm.
when Amy was about a year old. And I started just jotting down little notes and little things and funny little pictures for her at first, and then they became little one- and two-line and three-line poems. And over the years, I collected hundreds of them. I used to write things for her. And things that happened during the day or little questions that she'd ask me. And some people prevailed upon me to do it commercially. So the album is out, and it's doing very, very well. And there's some very, very sweet things in it, things that I think are important today. Like, for instance, Amy came home one day and said, you know, why is this, you know, kid in my class, you know, dark?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, how come I have light skin? And so, you know, I wrote her a little poem about that. I have two poodles in my house, and one is black and one is white.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I made the analogy for her, you know, things that she could understand. And I wrote Charlie and Lucy, black and white. White is morning, black is night. You can't have one without the other. I'm your sister, you're my brother. What I really mean is that there is skinny, there is fat. There is short and there is tall, and darling daughter, that's not all. Look around and you will see that no one looks like you or me. Many things are different, dear. Live with love and not with fear. Love, Daddy.
That's really nice.
Thank you.
Yet another dimension to the many talents of Red Buttons. What happens from here, from the Blue Max? You're going to be here till the 3rd or 2nd of March.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you go from here?
I think this is about it. I'm quitting the business. I think I'll open up a candy store in the Bronx. Get back,
back
to the Bronx.
On a street corner.
That's right. I think I've done it all now. There's nothing, I think, that's worthwhile after the Blue Max, so I may as well pack the whole thing in.
Okay.
I'll give all my pictures away while I'm here, and that's the end.
This is the finish.
That's it.
Okay. Well, we'll look for you at the Blue Max again. Thank you very much, Red Button.
Okay, Chuck. It was a pleasure to talk to you.